Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with U.S. House of Representatives in District 4, John Rutherford. John has been there now for several years. He's up for re-election this November. We're going to talk about that in a moment, about his re-election campaign and how we can jump on board and how we need your help in doing so. Congressman, do you think that it is possible, and I'm putting this hypothetically, to throw the ball in your court, do you think that somehow, somewhere, what I'm calling the socialist Democrats, do you think they've weaponized the COVID-19 or attempted to do so?
Well, I think you're seeing that now. Yes, I agree. Look, Nancy, and that's one reason the CARES Act was delayed almost 10 days, I think. We were trying to get that out as quickly as possible so that we could get that money into the hands of small businesses so they could pass it on to their workers. All of this money that was going to small business, 75% of it, had to go to their employees, the hardworking taxpaying American out there, or they had to pay that money back. That loan would stay a loan if they didn't pass that through to their employees to the tune of 75%. And so Nancy comes back to D.C. and wants to talk about the Green New Deal, pushing all of these crazy ideas and trying to force us to accept, in order to get this money out to the American taxpayer. Now, and quite frankly, we did negotiate some things. We added a $600 payment to unemployment. That was an additive. And then also, the $25 million that everybody talked about that went to New York Symphony and
Kennedy Center and others.
So those were some of the things that we finally had to agree to get this money out to the tax-paying American out there.
One of the things that's taken place, and you touched on that with the benefits for unemployment, et cetera. I've talked with a number of businessmen here in this city. If I call the names, you'd know all of them. And they have people that are their employees, but they are better off financially to stay at home and collect an abundance of unemployment as well as their normal benefits. For example, and I don't know if our listeners understand this or not, but if a person is making, say, $300, $400 a week prior to the layoff, now with the extra benefit through the Nancy Pelosi weaponizing the COVID-19, they're making $600, $650 a week, and they're saying, in essence, I don't want to go back to work.
$875 in Florida, because you added to the $275,
the
$600. That is the issue that we brought up. But in the end, it's a negotiated process, and we had to go with it or delay it even longer. Look, I believe if we had gotten that money out quickly, back when Nancy started dragging her feet for these socialist programs, we could have actually saved about 10 million jobs, I believe, by getting that money out more quickly. Now, I hope that a lot of those people are being hired back by the companies that are getting the PPP dollars, the Paycheck Protection Plan dollars. But, by the time we rolled it out, there were already 22 million Americans unemployed. Should have never happened that way.
One of the things that, and you touched on that, and it causes me to think, Nancy right now, and I'm familiar with it, and you're perhaps more familiar with it, of course, being in that position. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer planning on having part of the next phase of the CARES Act, phase four, I believe it would be called. They're talking about having a part of that as their requirement for having the election in November by mail-in ballots.
And, mail only.
Mail only. That's right. Mail only.
Mail in only. And let me tell you, I'm adamantly opposed to that. People need to be able to go to the ballot box like we have always done. Look, if you, and I keep bringing this up to folks, if we can safely go to Publix, and Publix has done an amazing job. One-way aisles, marks on the floor, the plexiglass between the cashiers. They've made it possible for us to continue to be fed during this pandemic. If my wife can go to the grocery store, why can't we figure out a way to go to the polls? That makes absolutely no sense to me.
And I've used that same argument when it comes to going to church. If church church pastors are careful and want to be, why not be allowed to do so? And yet that's been restricted. And you're aware of this, I'm sure. I'm looking at an article from Tony Perkins. No quarantine on religion. And the the president just signed an executive order May the 4th let's see if I can jump down on this. After 8 years of administration with war on religion through the Obama administration, President Trump leaned over a piece of paper in the Rose Garden and vowed, quote, "We will not allow people of faith to be targeted, bullied, or silenced anymore." It was an executive order on May the 4th, and most are not aware of that, that says across the nation, mayors and governors, you cannot sequester and close churches.
Exactly.
Yet we find, as you said, you go to Walmart, you go to Target, Home Depot, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And somehow, some way, we think that we can't be safe going out to vote or going to church. Congressman, hang on for a moment. We've got a caller on the line that may have a question for us. Go ahead with your question or comment, please.
Yes, I do have a question for Congressman Rutherford, but typically I want to preface it with a couple remarks. And though Congressman Rutherford may not recognize the voice or my name if I were to give it, which I'm not going to do, he'd recognize the face because he was so helpful to me a couple of years ago on the immigration issue up in Washington, and I have known him during his time as sheriff as really a fine man. And I what I want to tell him once he figures out who this is that my report card on Congressman Rutherford, unlike some of those in my conservative group, is an A, and that is because John Rutherford, and I'll use his first name, John Rutherford understands the evil that's afoot in Washington. Now, here's why I laid that foundation. Our nation is in a time of great evil. John knows that. Pastor, you know that, and those who listen to the show. This is a time of evil unlike we've had in our recent history. John, as a congressman, has the opportunity, if it is even doable, to stand in the gap as our nation faces this great crisis. As a former military guy and as a pilot, and as you've heard me say, Pastor, several times, when you have a problem with the airplane, you fly that airplane until it tells you what's wrong with it. The idea behind that is if you take an action too quickly, you're probably going to crash anyway and burn. So I've bided my time. I've just watched situations develop. But the second thing that you do, or the third thing that you do in a time of crisis after keep flying the airplane, then analyze the situation, then you act. You take appropriate action. And that's what I want to address, and this will be a little uncomfortable, so please understand I'm speaking only from an academic background. The lesson of history is that when a nation gets in the situation it's in now, the people will stand up and do one of two things. They'll cause a successful armed revolt, which was our revolution, or it will descend into anarchic chaos, which we see often in socialist countries when the people decide that socialism is not for them. In America, we've had the surfacing of these Marxist socialists. I call them just Satans, quite frankly, because Satan's behind the affairs of the world anyway, and that's part of your Catholic tradition, John. The Satan is behind the affairs of the world. So all these Marxists, all this stuff that's coming upon America now is really just driven by the evil one himself. Now, be that the case, we have to decide what that act is, what that action is. As a military man, I understand that there is a correct use of violence. when it's appropriate and it's necessary. You, as a congressman, stand in the gap between civilized transition to stability and violent transition to stability, if you understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Do you believe, and this is the question, do you believe that you have enough congressmen, meaning senators and those in your branch of the House, who have the moral basis and the spine, if not Christian conviction, to verbally push back hard and take those actions that are necessary to reveal the evildoers? Because what James Comey mm-hmm. has done, what Barack Obama did before him, what Nancy Pelosi is doing now is, in my view, provably treason. It is treasonous. It is trying to overthrow the duly elected president of the United States. That process we have courtesy of the blood of our forefathers. My dad and mm-hmm. others that served in the war, I stood in the way. You as a police officer stood in the way. One of Doc's sons, a police yeah. officer. We stood in front of potential violence to preserve that right to select the government that's over us. John Rutherford, sir, are there enough people in Congress, and particularly in the House of Representatives, with enough moral and ethical backbone to take the action that's necessary before one of two things happen? This nation crumbles into anarchy, and I will tell you with my own intel background, that a lot of people that understand we are very, very, very close to violence in the streets that will be unmanageable, or a group of individuals may surface somewhere at some time that will take this country back by force. Now, again, I'm speaking yeah. in an academic sense and treading on tough ground, but I wonder if you would just give me the warm fuzzy, if you can, that we do have people like you in Congress who are going to be able to stand up and, in a civilized fashion, push back against the evil that's here and take the legal action that must be taken to rid us of the cancer, of the sewage that we find coming at us from the Democrat Party and liberal Republicans. Thanks for considering those words, and I await your answer, good sir. God bless you.
Thank you for your call. Congressman, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. And listen, I will tell you, I think the short answer is, yes, there are. In fact, I'm one of the first things that I did, you know, I was talking about, I realized you pass bills through relationships. One of the first things that I did was join a bipartisan working group in Washington, D.C. Now, there's only 30 of us, but we're growing. There were about 20 when I first got up there 3 years ago. But that's a small number out of, you know, 435. But I will tell you, what concerns me is how much control leadership has over the members. And even more so on I think, the Democrat side. The Democrats, for some reason, they're able to, their leadership is able to control a lot more than the Republican leadership. And I think we invested too much in leadership, and that's being looked at and talked about right now, at least in our conference. But I do believe there are a lot of good men and women in Congress that want to be able to do the right thing, but they've got to find ways around working through this leadership problem. We've got to change. I think the leadership. That's one reason I think this upcoming election in November is going to be critical. We have absolutely have to have the conservatives take back, and I'm not even going to say Republican, but conservatives take back control of the House.
Yes.
So that we can get things done, maintain control of the Senate, and keep the president in the White House. I believe that's the best way forward for America. I see the Green New Deal and some of these other programs that are really forcing the entire Democrat Party so far to the left And it's a concerted effort, believe me. Folks, if you want to really get scared, go read about the Justice Democrats and who they are and what they're doing and who organized that group. Chink Uger and Zach Exley, these are scary folks.
Congressman, you need to do is look at AOC also, and as you know, she's introduced a bill. I've forgotten the House bill number of it, where it would literally, and I'm using it as a broad brush, would literally take all property ownership out of the hands of private ownership, put it in the hands of the federal government to distribute and to set the rents and collect the rents and the payments, the mortgages, et cetera.
Oh yeah, and a minimum wage for everybody, and you know,
Nancy Pelosi wants to give everybody $2,000 a month now to stay at home.
Right, right. A sustainment wage. It really is scary, and that's why the point that the caller made is so spot on.
Yes, absolutely.
The soul of this country is at risk.
Yes, that leads us to a very, very, very important segment of what I want us to talk about. Let's talk about some of the things. For example, you and I both are against the universal background check law, and that was House Bill 8, I believe it was, House Resolution 8,
right.
And you voted against that, and there were some folks who got upset about that. Tell us your rationale behind voting against it.
Dr. Youngblood, I'm glad you brought that up because I also voted against VAWA, the Violence Against Women's Act.
Yes, yes, you did.
People like, wait a minute, now you're a sheriff and you vote, you know, look, you won't find a greater defender of women against violence than me. And I believe up to a point, it depends on how it's brought out, but I believe in universal background check. Now, Here's the reason I voted against H.R. 8. It had a title that said universal background checks. But if you read the bill, Section 3 of that bill actually required that if I wanted to buy your gun, you and I would go to an FFL dealer. I would get my background check run. I'm fine with that, but it goes further. It says now you have to give your gun to the FFL dealer who sells it to me as though it's his stock. Then later on in the bill, it says that this bill cannot be used to set up a national gun registry. But Section 3 did exactly that, just diffused it across the states and the dealers, but it's still there because if you know how the application of that would work, if he sells that gun to me as though it's his stock, that gun has to be registered.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just created a registry for every gun sold in America. That's why I voted against it. And people are like, well, I thought you liked background checks. I do. I want people to get background checks. But I don't want to set up any kind of registry.
Well, what you just touched on, and I'm in agreement with that because I'm, as I tell people, I believe in God and Glock and in that order. And so I'm a constitutionalist and a Second Amendment believer. If I were to give my weapon to my wife and she were to be found with it in her purse, then all of a sudden I would have broken the law and made a federal crime become a felon.
Well, you can't rely on the title of these bills.
That's right.
Just like the Violence Against Women's Act. Now, that bill's been around for a long time. This was just a reauthorization of that bill. If the Democrats had simply reauthorized the bill, I would have voted for it. But what they did was they stuck in there an element that was going to hold business owners responsible for any domestic violence that occurred on their property. Mm. Well, wait a minute. You're going to create a special relationship that's now going to make them liable. That is a trial lawyer's dream come true.
That's right.
I voted against it. If they'd have just said, we just want to reauthorize violence against women, I'd have voted for it. But that's not what they did. They tried to use it to get their socialist idea through. And so I had to vote against it. And that's what Democrats are famous for doing.
They're called poison pills. They take a bill, they put a poison pill in there, and make, because they know that the Republicans will have to vote against it, and they already have the votes to get it passed because they're in the majority. And so we have to vote against universal background checks. We have to vote against VAWA. And so what I want to encourage people, if you see a vote that I take and you're like, I don't understand why you would have voted against that, contact my office and I will tell you why I voted against that bill. What's in there that is not plain on its face? And I can tell you, I had even members that didn't understand that H.R. 8, the Universal Background Check bill, was actually going to create a registration because they don't know how the application of the bill is going to work.
That's it.
And so, you know, call the office.
As I understand, it's called enabling legislation with the rules and the regulations after a bill is passed. That's going to be interpreted and applied. Congressman,
exactly.
Our listeners may or may not know that you're facing I call it a loose likes lost liberal Democrat that you're faced off with for the reelection. Talk with us about your campaigning and your running for reelection, and very briefly touch on a couple of two or three things. How's this coronavirus going to affect your campaign? And secondly, tell our listeners how we can jump on board and assist you. We need to put you back in that office. And your opponent is one that was, by the way, our listeners may not know, your opponent was one that was for Andrew Gillum for the state of Florida as governor. And I think we can all look back now and see the tragedy that would have been if he had been put in office as governor. So talk with our listeners about that.
Yes. Well, and I will tell you, she's also opposed to the Second Amendment. Now, she claims to be a moderate, yet at one of her events in Nassau County, I saw where they filed, I think it was 23 or 26 assault weapon ban petitions. So, no, she's not Second Amendment either. But what I want to talk about is what I'm for, which I've done, but also how campaigning in these times is really difficult. In fact, as you can imagine, we had several fundraisers scheduled and had to cancel them because we couldn't come together in a group. So that's hurt on the fundraising side. But if people want to contribute, and I would love any amount that they could send, VoteJohnRutherford.com. You can go on there and contribute. There's also an address there if you want to mail a check in to Citizens for John Rutherford. That information's there as well. But it has made it very difficult to do the ground game. We were going to start walking neighborhoods last month. We've not been able to do that. Now we may. You know, we're waiting to see when we can start that in the near future, I hope. But it's made it difficult to get out to the constituents. Although we have held several Zoom meetings, and in fact, I was just on one last night. But those are difficult. You know, it's just not the same as being there in person with your constituents. I will say this, one of the things that I am most proud of is the work that my office does for our constituents here in Northeast Florida. You know, people talk a lot about the work that we do in Tallahassee, but I have to tell you, the work that we do back here is equally important. That's why I said it was so important that we were here when the CARES Act rolled out, because I was able to help so many people get into that system and understand how that system was going to work. And then also, one of the things that I hadn't even realized was how many people in the 4th Congressional District are spread out all over the globe. And we had to help get them back home with through all these travel barriers that were being put up by different countries. I mean, we have people from Uzbekistan trying to get back home, Peru, Venezuela, all over the place. And so that was a challenge. But I can tell you, my staff has done an amazing job.
Well, John, you know, I can vouch for that, and having worked with your staff on several issues, of the accommodation they show, the ability and the professionalism and the openness and the returning of calls when it's necessary, et cetera, et cetera. So I can tell our listeners, I've experienced it personally, and I know what your staff does and the support that they give for not only you and your position, yeah. but also for your constituents. Speak yeah. with us just for a moment, and you've touched on it, but let's do that again. Email address, website address, phone contact, because I want to encourage yeah. our listeners today to honestly jump on board, get behind Congressman John Rutherford. Let's put this yeah. man back in office. As he stands for President Trump, let's stand for him so that he can yeah. hold our president's hands up and continue. John, share yeah. that just for a moment. Then I've got one other question.
Yeah, votejohnrutherford.com, and there's a donate button there. They can go to John Rutherford for Congress. That'll take you to our campaign website. There's some information there. You can go to our office website as well, John Rutherford Congress, and on that website you can sign up for the Rutherford Ride Along. Every week on Friday we send out information about what's going on the previous week. That's a great way to stay up on, you know, what's going on in D.C. and back here in the district. So go to those websites, and we'd love to have your financial support as well, because it's tough. You can't do the regular fundraising routine, not yet anyway.
John, what it would be, as I said, now I tell people, and you've heard the term, our listeners need to put the money where the mouth is. They say, we want you back in office, then go on there and push that donate button. Would you say okay to that?
Yes, thank you.
Here's one other question. Hey, We've got about a minute and a half left on this okay. broadcast, John, if you would. Okay. We have a varying opinion as to how the coronavirus was released, where it was released from. Our Pentagon believes, our State Department believes, Senator Tom Cotton and others believe that it was released out of the virology lab in Wuhan, China. Do you believe that was accident, or do you believe that was purposeful in some dastardly way?
I think it remains to be seen whether it was accidental or purposeful. The story that has come out of the dossier, I believe, is that a worker was infected, went home sick from that lab. It jumped to his wife, and the Chinese never let anybody know that it was going from human to human. And I believe it came out of that lab. I also believe we're going to find out that the CDC and the NIAID, which is the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, is also going to have dollars over there, as well as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yes, all I believe are culpable.
Even George Soros reported to have put some money into that lab. So
yes.
It remains to be seen who all is responsible, but I do believe that Wuhan, and that lab in particular, is going to yes. be the source.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in today. John, thank you for being with us. We're praying that God will have you reelected and put you back in representing us. Tune in the next time as we face the issues, ladies and gentlemen.
For another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.